You're listening to
the Music Interval Theory Podcast with TC and Frank.
Why does the music in Cape Fear sound so terrifying? It's not just the instruments or the orchestration. It is the way the notes are put together. In the following video, I break down the first minute of Bernard Herrmann's famous score of Cape Fear. I will show you how he uses the intervals to create tension, discomfort, and unease, step by step. If you are a composer or love film music, this breakdown will help you understand how to build suspense in your own music. Let's dive in and explore the power of intervals in film scoring. Let's tackle these things one line after another. Now, let me first explain to you what I mean by these numbers. All of those numbers, they stand for chromatic steps or minor seconds. So if you read -5, this describes a sequence from one note to the next that goes down by 5 chromatic steps. That is from the E going down to the B. Then from here, it reads -1, that is the B flat, and it reads -6. So a minus sign indicates the descending direction. This is important to know, so I'm not referring to diatonic intervals. So let's stick to chromatic steps. And we could almost say that Cape Fear is a study in chromatic steps, because this whole piece is packed with ones. Let me actually point out that HF stands for horizontal formula. And that is the DNA, the description of a line, no matter where you start it. It can start on any note. As long as you follow the same horizontal formula, it will be the same line. Now here it reads -5, -1, -6. And it's interesting to see that this describes an octave, right? So we have a 6 interval here. If we combine the first two numbers and then another 6, the same thing happens the moment we go to the variation of this horizontal formula. Now we have a 5 if we combine the first two numbers and a 7. So again, we outline the octave as our outside interval in both versions. So what happens really is we move the one interval around in the middle. We just shift it or transpose it. And if you already followed some of the techniques, especially the ones that my partner in crime, Thomas Jace Jones, went into with his matrix theory sessions, then you know the ones, the position where the ones occur, defines the tonal center. Now in here, by moving the one up and down, we already dilute the tonal center. And that is an interesting technique that Bernard Herrmann does throughout the whole piece. Very seldom you have the impression that this is all based on a clear tonal center and it follows some strict progressions in harmony. It actually does not. And partly the reason for that is he is very flexible with where he puts the ones. Now, also interesting in the first line is to see that we are dealing with 3 bars. And the second line brings in 5 bars. So you see by the rehearsal letter, this is actually where a new section starts. So we have a plain 8-bar introduction, but it's not split equally, like a 4-bar and another 4-bar section. It is split into 3 and 5. And that also gives some ideas about form. So again, he is blurring the lines. So everybody who listens to at least a lot of pop music would expect chunks in bars of 4. That is pretty much the structure that every pop song follows. Now he starts with 3 bars. Then he completes the 3 bars with 5 bars to eventually end up with 8. And that is already a very nice and elegant way of presenting the introduction. If you like how Herrmann uses the intervals in his score, check out the free intro events to interval theory that I regularly offer. In those sessions, I go deeper into how you can put the intervals to work in your own music. and come up with unique and fresh ideas. All the information is below. And now let's go back to the video and listen to Bernhard Herrmann. Now let me quickly replay you just the first line so that you get the idea of what this sounded like. And please pay attention to where the ones occur. Here it's from B to B flat and then from C to the natural B. Now, let's get to the second line here. That is why I actually let it play through. You recognized the chromatic lines on the outsides. Of course you did. What you probably did not recognize is what interval those outside lines actually create and what this does to how you perceive the tonal center. So let's quickly check what is going on with the blue lines. That's the chromatic line down there and the chromatic line up there. So we start on an E in both cases. And then this outlines an octave or more than one octave. But let's be practical. Let's call this a 12 in an octave position. Now, the moment we go up and down simultaneously, we create an interval, a vertical interval between those two guys that is a 10, right? From the F to the E flat. Now we continue the same thing. And from the F sharp to the D, that's an 8. Now here, it's a 6. It's a 4. And now you have spotted the pattern. That's a 2. And here we end up with the octave position again. And it starts over, right? So we are at the octave. That's again a 10, 8, and a 6. Now, why is this important? This is pretty much the whole tone scale, what you get to hear vertically. Although the chromatic line, this is what you perceive horizontally. That is where the energy is flowing. And a chromatic line is the strongest line you can write. Everybody can follow a chromatic line. Now, the moment you combine two chromatic lines, you step on the outside interval. And that is what he does with those movements. And he outlines the whole tone scale. One of the very nice properties of the whole tone scale is it does not have a one interval, which means there is no clear tonal center. And this is important to understand because he actually started playing around with this one interval and where it appears. And now he plays around with the one interval and uses it to blur these tonal centers that you get to hear. And that is pretty much happening in those outside lines. Now in the middle, the red part, you're seeing it's always a two interval or a major second in diatonic terms, and it resolves chromatically. Again, this is all chromatic stuff. So the B flat goes to the natural B, the A flat goes down to the G. And this pretty much continues for the next two bars. So the first three bars follow the same pattern. And also the distance to the upper chromatic line stays the same. Again, this is not very obvious if you just listen to it, but the distance between the top note of the two interval and the chromatic line is always a 6. So E to B flat, that's a 6 down. D to A flat, that's a 6 down. C to F sharp, that's a 6 down. So it's a locked interval. And a 6 interval is dominant. And that means it has an unstable character. It wants to move and it emphasizes the nature of the two, which is also a dominant interval. A two is not stable and it wants to resolve. And this is the moment now where I want to transition to a little interval theory technique down there. And in here, I just give you some ideas of how the two can resolve. And after we more or less examined this whole line here, I will give you the concept so that you don't have to remember any of these notes. You just will know how this thing resolves naturally. Because now we are stepping into the nature of the intervals. They actually do have a nature. And this is not very obvious if you come only from a diatonic point of view. Now, first, let me quickly play you the treble only, because this shows you already the ways how a two can resolve. And it's interesting because some of them sound very strong to you, like this one here, for example. That is the authentic cadence. Welcome to the world of diatonic chord progressions. Now, let me continue to these other ones here. So I'm going to start again from this guy. Now, these doesn't sound like a resolution, right? But let me give you more context. And then you will understand that actually every bar sounds like that's the only way the two wants to go because it is so strong. Okay, this one was right. No, wait, this one actually was right. So the shortcut is definitely they are all right. And it feels right. It sounds right. But if you just listen to the treble, it's really great. It's not obvious at all. And actually, to make it easier for you, here are again the final chords that we moved into. And if I played you those in a sequence, then you realize out of a sudden that the two can go many places. That's the one that everybody does, by the way. Some of the guys know that you can resolve chromatically. That is this guy here. This one, by the way, is the reflection of the authentic cadence. And this one is just a pedal tone on top. This always works. But these are all the ways that we just moved into. And if you listen to those structures in one go, then you realize how flexible this is in terms of tonal centers. This is actually great. And now let me get you to the concept here. The two wants to resolve. We know this already. But the way it resolves is always the same. These structures here in the treble, if I bring this guy down, if I bring that guy down, and if you look at those intervals, all of them, it's always a four. Always. This one is a four, that's a four, that's another four, and here's just another four. The question is, how do we move into the four? And now I'm getting back to this line because one of those guys always is moving chromatically. That is this guy, at least one of the guys. Here, both of them move chromatically. Here, the upper guy moves chromatically. And that is just a common note. So there is no chromatic movement in here. But still, it is always a strong connection. And that is the moment where we talk about good part writing. And this answers one of the questions, like, how can I get to more interesting chord progressions that sound unique and fresh and more original? Well, make sure you focus on part writing way more than on the usual progressions that everybody does, which is usually the circle of fifth. And if you look at this movement down here in the bass, guess what that is? That's the circle of fifth. That's the circle of fifth. That's the circle of fifths. And another circle of fifths. Now we can go to the tritone substitution and we can use the root cycle 3, for example, to mimic the circle of fifths, and it all will work. So there are more ways to make this sound more interesting. But the basic concept is that the two wants to move to a four. And guess what that is? It's the complementary interval of a four, which is the eight. And that gives you some good insights into how Bernard Herrmann used intervals to create fear in Cape Fear. If you found this breakdown helpful, Hit the like button and subscribe for more insights on film music and composition. Got questions or thoughts? Please drop a comment below. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for watching and happy composing. Bye.
This podcast is powered by the Music Interval Theory Academy, your resource for getting clarity and confidence in music composition and orchestration. See you inside at musicintervaltheory.academy.